Good morning and welcome to day four, number 114 with the man, Frank Scalish from Ohio. The birds are chirping. The cats are meowing.
The flowers are blooming.
The flowers are blooming and the smallmouth, largemouth and spotted bass are chomping. It is May 25th and we are live. Uncle Frank, how are you doing?
I am good. How are you?
No complaints at all.
Outstanding.
Enjoying my week. I've got a busy day of yard work ahead of me after after our show today. I went and I had an underpowered weed eater. You ever tried to do work on a 2-acre country property with an underpowered weed eater?
No, I have not. I bought a weed eater that'll cut down a tree.
Well, that's what I needed to have. And I had one that was very efficient. I liked it, but it was one of those electric weed eaters. There's a house before this where I was eating the weeds, you just do around the house and you're right. Good. I get maybe 10% done and half of it doesn't chop down what I need it to cut, and then the battery would die.
Yeah, you know what's the crazy thing is I got a Ryobi heavy duty one that takes a big giant lithium battery on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing, I've got ivy. On my wood line, there's a big patch of ivy that goes around the outside perimeter of the woods. And then I've got ivy around the house. Okay. And I wanted to open up a gap. So when I cut the grass, I have a place where this is going to be so convoluted to try.
Do we need to draw a diagram of the yard?
No, we don't need a diagram.
I'm just saying.
But okay, here. So, all right, we're drawing a diagram.
A yard diagram.
So it's going to be kind of convoluted, but I'm working on it here.
I'm waiting. I'll go big screen with you here so we can understand what's going on. Cause I'm all about this. Cause I'm also trying to decide, do I weed killer certain sections or do I just keep trying to trim it back? I've never been a huge fan of the weed killer.
Okay. This is going to be tricky. All right. Okay. So this is going to be tricky and you won't get it, but all right. So here, let me do this. All right. So here here's the wood line.
Yep.
All right. So this is part of the patio, part of the walk, part of my driveway.
Okay.
This is also so all of the ivy is in here and all of the ivy is around the perimeter of the woods. Okay. Yep. So there's a pinch point here. If we were fishing, this would be a good spot. So anyhow, So what I wanted to do, because this is like a lawnmower width wide, it grew out and grew out and it's closing off. All right. So I took the weed eater and this is absolutely crazy. So I took this weed eater and I literally ground all this ivy back. So now it's better rounded point here, and open this up so it's like four lawnmower widths wide. So I took this weed eater and I literally just mowed this ivy to the dirt. It took the vines, the roots, everything out. And it took me literally minutes to do it. It was unbelievable. This thing is for being a battery powered unit, this thing literally is so destructive. I mean, it's like if I freak out when I use it, so I wear my work boots when I use it because I don't want that cord to touch me because it'll cut you wide open. But it's the best. It'll make mincemeat out of anything. Small saplings, it cuts them right off. I mean, it's pretty badass.
Nice. I know I went with the Husqvarna from Lowe's.
Oh yeah, Husky makes a good one.
Husqvarna.
Right.
Husqvarna with it's orange, which is kind of like OSU in Texas, but anyway, I got over that. And
or Mark's Super Spooks.
Yeah, well, no, those are accented orange. But yeah, no, I'm all in on this. Takes the actual gas. It has the deal where you prime it and then it starts and it goes rah, 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 and then you hit it and it goes rah, 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 and you like feel like you're playing air guitar with the weed eater.
Yeah.
I would point out, this reminded me of what you said. I just Googled it. Did you know that some plants emit noise when they are cut, which can be interpreted as a scream? This noise is a form of communication for survival. Plants do not have a nervous system, but plants can also cry for help if they are injured.
Oh my gosh.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't
seeing
know that.
Seeing that recently. I was watching the news and they were talking about how plants scream.
Perfect. That's perfect.
So that's just a nightmare opening segment if you're a ficus.
My yard must be, when every time I pull that thing out, my yard must freak out. He's back.
John Ticks asks, are these available on LureNet? No, they're not.
You know, Husky used to make, Husqvarna used to make motorcycles. I'm sure they still do.
Oh, this thing sounds like a motorcycle. You got to have the oil and gas mix in it. I was trying to think, and we could kind of relate this to fishing a little bit, but so I got the thing home and the string, the eater part was back, is encapsulated in the head. So I had to take the head out and figure out how to restring it. Oh my gosh. That type of technology, like technical stuff on that. Like, listen, I can sit there with a internet issue and work through it. Like Josh from Minnesota will sit down with me for 2 or 3 hours and he's a tech guy and I'm totally fine. Like I don't have that inner rage. I feel like me trying to string the weed eater up properly is the exact type of just uncontainable inner rage you feel when someone pulls in on a rock pile 50 feet in front of you.
Well, you know, the funny thing is like the weed eater stuff doesn't bother me. But the technological stuff that you just described makes me go out of my gourd.
Yeah. And I thought that at my age that I had this under control, but I'm in the kitchen cursing out a weed eater and I've had the thing in there for maybe 5 minutes and I'm just done with it. And I finally, it required some assistance and some Google and things like that, but I finally got it figured out.
Perfect. We're talking about landscaping today.
Yes, we're talking about all sorts of stuff. The topic for today's show is also a little bit haphazard, so to speak. You don't really know what you're going to get, when you're going to come upon it. And that topic would be
junk fishing. We are going to talk about junk fishing. But before we do that, I have to, my wife restrings the lawnmower. I'm a moron. My wife won't go near any of the power tools. So that's my.
Here's Brett. He said last time he tried to restring one, he said, screw it, and just bought an entirely new unit.
Outstanding.
Okay. I'm not the only one. Sorry.
No. So remember the BTL 100 code ends at the end of June.
Okay.
So,
that doesn't work on the paint shop stuff though.
Probably not.
Cause I tried to use it when I purchased my own color number 7s that were available. I wasn't able to put it in.
So it's not available on the paint shop items, but, it's available on anything that's not already currently on sale.
Okay.
That's the best way to put it. And there's a very small amount of color 7s available.
But they are. I'm shocked that there's still a couple left.
I could venture a guess to say that if a handful of guys get the urge to buy more, they'll be out. And then when you're the color, the BTL 100 code, don't forget, there's new custom colors in the Finesse Worms and the Spine Cross. And there's a really super cool NXS, Norman NXS color on the paint shop. It's called Muted Citrus.
Hold on. Let me pull that up and we'll just get all of the details out of the way before we get into junk fishing. Because this might take a while because during our we actually had a short pre-show meeting. You were getting anxiety over how many 12 setups for junk fishing this time of the year?
Yeah, it's my least favorite time ever.
Hold on, let me share the screen right here because this is a cool color. Did you come up with this one, or is this a?
I did not do muted citrus.
It seems like a very Frank Scalish color.
There is a color coming out that I did do, and it is of the citrus variety. No, this color is pretty badass. The shoulders actually are almost like a pink silver pearl on the shoulders of this thing. The back blue is like, remember how we used to lay them on the dashboard and fade them out in the old days, Matt?
Yes, I remember guys doing that. I was never a dasher.
Yeah, so we would lay them out on our dashboards in our car and leave them sit out in the sun for decades, and we would fade them all out. And so, yeah, for decades. And and we would literally fade them out. So this is actually painted with the fade in it. So you don't have to, you don't have to do that. A lot of the smallmouth guys are buying that up.
It's kind of like those jeans that come pre-distressed.
Yeah, pre-distressed jeans. That's perfect.
Do you ever wear the pre-distressed jeans, Frank? With the
dude, I used to be a player, man. I wore everything. I even had parachute pants when I was
the same. Is that like bill bottom pants?
No.
What are the difference between?
They're just like, you know, real baggy, fluffy pants.
Would you wear them fishing?
No, I would wear them out on the town.
Wait a second.
Yeah,
you wore pants like this?
I don't know. They could be the wrong ones.
Those are the examples of parachute pants.
They weren't like that. They were more like they were more like army, like the, no. Absolutely not. They're the old ones.
You would walk in and be like, you have three wishes.
Yeah. No, they're more like army, you know, airplane, airmen pants.
But when you went to the discotheque, you'd
staying alive.
throw a pair of those bad boys on, slick back the mullet, and call it good.
Yeah, I can't touch this. Yeah,
you can draw and carry a tune. That's multi-talented.
Oh yeah, there's many facets to me that nobody knows about. Thank God.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. Were we talking about fishing?
We're talking about junk right now.
How did we go from a muted subtle chartreuse to parachute pants? Because that's how that connection was made.
I said back in the day.
Yeah, back, Frankie back Jr., you're on that. Frank Jr., see if there's any old pics of Uncle Frank sporting those trousers.
Yeah, okay, Nate. Thanks, bud. Appreciate you.
So they got to be buried in a shoebox in a closet somewhere.
Hey, I have a thing to say. There was a gentleman that DM'd me, and I think I think he was a contest winner. He works at a trailer place. DM me again. So, I was fishing the other day, and somebody walked across my trailer and broke my brake line off.
What?
Instead of walking around the truck, okay, there was four or five of us parked in a straight line, and there was one of those porta potties on the far side.
So someone had to get there.
And they must have cut across the trailers and inadvertently stepped on my.
Because they were clenching, so they didn't have a full stride. So right. It was more of a shuffle over, caught the foot on it, brake line gone.
Right. So just call me or DM me. I tried to find your number, but I don't know where the hell I put it. This show is a junk show today, man.
That's
we
fine.
Are everywhere.
We're 114 in. We can have one of these every now and then. Have you been catching any fish? Is your boat functional?
Oh yeah, the boat's running fabulous. I'm not saying that. It's been running great. Everything's good. Last week, Frankie and I hooked up Active Target on it, and I got a chance to go out and use it, but I was to get used to it. I was chasing crappies because they're schooling up tight. They're easier to find. and they don't move around as much as the bass do. So, because this is my literally my aside from when I went with you, Matt, crappie fishing, mm-hmm. but I didn't really control everything. You did most of that. So what I did was I had to get really used to the unit and understand slow foot pedal movements and all that stuff to really get mm-hmm. dialed in. And then, so I went crappie fishing and I crushed on them. And it was a lot of fun, and the bass were spawning in the particular lake that I was in. There's no inside grass line. It's a gradual grass all the way to the bank. And so, the crazy thing is that normally you could find really good, stepping over the trailer seems like a risky move. Yeah. Whoever was living on the edge.
Yeah. So anyway, back to
anyhow. This. Yeah. So anyhow, so I went in, I snatched a few largemouth off their beds, and then I went to a flat that I know has spawning smallmouth on it. I snatched a few smallmouth off their beds, and then I bailed on it and I went crappie fishing the rest of the day. Because I'm trying to really get dialed in on the forward facing game. I'm a dinosaur. I'm side imaging and 2D sonar for, you know, ever.
Nothing wrong with that.
And so it's really difficult for me to, like, I kept switching back and forth to 2D to forward facing, 2D forward facing. really what I want the forward facing for is when I'm fishing when I'm crankbaiting grass lake edges, so I can see the grass edge and I don't waste a cast, because with 2D, I get on the ledge, get off the ledge, and then try to parallel it. So with 2D, you can't see the grass where it comes out and goes in and comes out and goes in. So a lot of times I'll make a cast and my first cast might be too far up into the grass and I get bogged down in the grass. So I'm trying to dial in on being able to see it on my forward facing, make the right cast, the first cast. So I'm not wasting casts. And so I did a lot of that too. I practiced that a lot the other day too.
Rick. Yeah, there you go.
All right, Rick, DM me, will you?
Ooh, that is a good point. Hawk 43 says, sounds like Frank is getting ready for the Opens next year.
You guys, man, the Opens.
but overall, you think it's going to become a tool. You're not going to become one of those guys who's doing figure eights out there like the rest of us now, just forward facing 100% of the time, right? You're still going to be able to provide A4 information for people from the bank all the way up to the top end basket.
Oh, yeah. No, because I and Frankie and I have this argument all the time. He's like, it's going to change the way you fish. And I'm like, it's not going to change the way I fish. I want it to enhance the way I fish. Mm-hmm. I still have to find fish the way I always find fish, because that's what's ingrained in my head. But where is it? Next week's show will actually, next week's show is going to show you where it's really going to enhance things.
Yeah. Just as a quick, next week's show, you're taking care of some good family business next week.
Yes. My daughter's graduating.
Congratulations.
Yes. And she's, and so we're going to see her graduation.
So you'll be loaded to the cork as you celebrate the graduation. And so next week will be a recorded show. We're actually recording that a little bit later today after the yard work takes place. And I'm excited for that show. Very excited for that. You actually have a lot to get ready for that show. But that'll be next week's show then.
Right. But this week's show is absolutely junk fishing.
Oh, are we going to start actually talking about what the show's about now?
Yeah, let's good. Let's do it.
All right. Let's do it.
We've been bloviating long enough.
That's good. Don't you think? It was some high quality bloviation.
Boy, that's right.
Some high quality bloviation.
That's some high quality H2O. And so, and dude, you got me on big screen and I don't have an illustration to show yet.
Well, no, I'm just putting you on big screen because
all right.
You're I mean, what am I going to do here? Why do they need to see me at an equal size going, mm-hmm, yeah, uh-huh, yeah.
Well, because you're going to interject, dude.
Okay, well, I'll interject as a tiny little man to your right.
Okay. So first of all, I'm going to qualify this statement right now. This is my absolute, the most hateful way that I could be in a boat is when junk fishing is the issue. Now, we're not talking junk fishing like there's a pile of trash, let's go fish it. That's not junk fishing, okay? Junk fishing is when there's no main specific pattern. There's a lot of little things going on the lake. The bass are in a big state of transition or in a real big funk. And so what's happening is there's a lot of little patterns happening all around the lake. That's junk fishing. The problem with junk fishing is you literally need your front deck plastered with fishing rods because you have to have a different lure for every possible scenario that you can encounter while you're moving around on this lake. This is way too unorganized for my OCD. I absolutely hate this type of fishing, but you have to do what you have to do to catch them. So I thought it would be an interesting show because you guys know how organized I am all the time. So when does this typically happen, I guess is the question, all right? So what I'm finding out is that typically this happens at the very end of the spawn through parts of the post-spawn. What's going on now is you've got fish leaving beds, fish that left the beds earlier, because this is the way end of the spawn. There'll be a few fish on the beds, probably 80% of them are off the beds. And as you know, fish don't all spawn at the same time. So you've got fish in many different transitions, basically. The sloppy pattern will start to tighten up as summer starts to really get solid. Then the patterns start to tighten up again. So the best approach that I could say, because honestly, I hate this time of year. So the best approach that I could say is the first thing you want to do is you want to look for spawning areas, and you're going to work out from those spawning areas. Because there's going to be fish all the way through. Like here, last week, you guys were all piled on the Decatur Flats. Well, the Decatur Flats in places is shallow enough for bass to spawn on them. And they've got all kinds of little drainage ditches that run throughout these flats. So the bass can spawn on the high spots in the shell beds and then pull off into the drainage ditches based on weather, wind, or current, or lack thereof. And lack thereof, we'll get into next week's show, because then the bass have a tendency to suspend because they don't have to hold on anything. There's no reason for them to. But so the next thing to do is I'm going to find these spawning flats, but I'm going to look for areas here. I'll show you. I have a map. So what I'm going to do is...
Oh, you do have a map.
Yeah, I have one map.
Wow, that's a quality map too.
That's some high quality H2O. So anyway, can you see this thing?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, because it's popping.
I'm behind. So
no.
So these are the spawning flats, okay?
Yep.
Right in here. So now what I'm looking for is, okay, I've got some connected structure. This is a long point. I have connected structure that's still connected to the bank. I've got near offshore structure that's super close to the bank, but it's a separate entity unto itself, adjacent to main lake channels. Okay, so in my opinion, this area right here has everything we need. We have a gut in it, so as bass are piling out of here, they can stage in the gut before they start spreading out into their summer range. Or they can run down the long tapering points. Obviously, from all the shows past, you guys know the inside turns, high percentage areas. Here, this is a sleeper because what you have here is you have sort of a point underwater, but it's very close to this unconnected item right here. So this here has everything you want. Now, you'll add to it by if there's grass, blowdowns, stumps, rocks, what have you. All that adds to it, okay? Which brings you to the 50,000 rods you got to have on your deck. Because
it's actually 12, I believe.
Yeah, it's 12. But this 12, God, see, I can't even talk about it. Like, you know, if you ever see me on the water and I've got four rods or less on my boat, you know, I'm smashing their brains out. The more rods that I have to start peeling out, now you're in almost a scramble mode. You're not really scrambling. Like, I have a buddy of mine that's probably one of the best junk fishermen I've ever fished with. It's my buddy Troy from North Carolina. He doesn't care if he's got 30 rods on his boat. He'll be rolling down and he'll reach down and grab one, throw it out there, boom, and catch one. And then put the rod down and grab something else right after he just caught one. But that's how you have to junk fish. You can't get trapped. When the fish are doing a million things, you can't get trapped. So if you're going down a bank and you know, you're going down the bank and maybe there's some blow down, some wood, and you're flipping and pitching, right? Well, you have to be able to pick up that chatterbait, pick up the swim jig, pick up your square bill, you at a moment's notice, any given time. You know what I mean? Because you're catching fish. One on this, one on that, one on the other thing, one on the other thing. That's just how slop junk fishing goes. You just got to be in that second. And whatever comes in your head, you pick it up and you chuck it, because that's how it works. Because these fish are just, they're not patternable in the sense that, oh, they're all on, you know, long tapering points, 8 to 12 feet. So you run long tapering points all day. That's not how it is this time of year. They're all over the place. So you want to be cognizant of that. So this time of year, usually what I do is I'll have mostly moving baits because I'm in a hurry and I got to cover a lot of water to catch fish. So mostly moving baits. So I'll have a chatterbait, a spinnerbait. I'll have a flick shake, but with my flick shake, it's very specific. I'm either throwing a finesse worm or a yum dinger on it. Something that I throw it out, let it sink, reel it back in, and keep moving. I'm not fishing it. I'm not fishing the flick shake like I would in summertime on a grass lake where I'm fishing a grass edge and I take my time and I work down that edge. I'm doing, this is all fast stuff. I look for the target, I throw to the target. It's all very fast stuff. Ned rig is another good bait. You can chuck it out there, let it do its thing as it goes to the bottom. It hits the bottom, pop it a couple times, reel it in, and keep on keeping on. Obviously, square bill. The square A and the fat boy are always on my deck this time of year. I will have a deep little end also, because a lot of times when these fish are moving, your first transitional break is a high percentage spot. So the deep little end will cover that, you know, 6 to 8 foot, 6 to 10 foot range really well for you. Obviously in my world, I'm having a Carolina rig out. Because this is, you can honk a Carolina rig. You could fish it really fast, really efficient. My Carolina rig's not complicated. Spine craw or a lizard, easy peasy. But tandem with the Carolina rig, I got to have a football jig on or a wobblehead. Because I need something that I'm going to fish faster. I'm not slowing down and trying to meticulously get bites from numbers of fish. I'm trying to catch one here and one there and catch as many as I can during the day. Top water is another thing. Crazy shad is one of my go-to baits towards the tail end of the spawn. And so is a super spook junior. You know, you got to have a top water. Even a buzzbait could play this time of year on the shallower transitional zones. And then you always have to have a flipping stick because you can't pass by a dock or a blowdown or something you could flip at or a matted piece of grass. You have to have the flipping stick. But again, we're covering water. This is, I call it KVD style. You're always on your trolling motor. You're always moving and you're always casting. It's gotta be my least favorite.
Because you're targeting fish that could be spawning, fish that could be post-spawn, fish that could be already healed up and out in their summertime stuff, fish that could be targeting bluegill beds, fish that could be up on a shad spawn. You've got a little bit of everything going on, so you can't rule anything out.
That's junk fishing in a nutshell, Matt.
Okay.
You just can't leave anything out. It's a crazy way to fish. It can be very effective, and there's guys that just excel at it because that's how they live, you know. So
go back to your map there, because this is when I'm junk fishing and during that time. So what I have a problem, or what my difficulty is, I have a tendency to jump around a lot and look over and say, oh, let's try that, let's try this. And then as a result, I think I sometimes miss sections or areas where they could be. So if I'm coming into this area at this point over by the finger is where you're holding it there, are you going to drop the trolling motor there and you're going to start?
Yeah, I'm actually going to drop it just on the outside edge of this point off the map. Yep. So I can fish the swings, the point, and I'll run my way down and I'll run my way around. And then I'm going to definitely work my way out to this zone right here.
But you're not going to be trolling and running around. You're going to find an area like this map that has a lot of the different elements that are conducive to holding fish, to having the spawning, to having some post spawn fish, to having some all, and you're going to thoroughly fish it with a number of different baits as you go down the bank. This is the go down the bank pattern, not jump around and try a bunch of different stuff patterns. Try a bunch of different stuff while you keep your trolling motor in the water.
Correct, because here the whole key is these fish are doing a lot of different things and they're all over the board right now. So the whole key is to keep moving. So if you put yourself in an area that has the most of everything, you've got a little bit of near offshore, you've got blowdowns, you've got grass, if your lake has grass, rocks, whatever, you're now apt to catch a fish on every different piece of cover, but you're also apt to catch fish on different structural elements. For example, an inside swing on a point. They're always high percentage spots, but this is a time when you're probably going to get bit there because you got fish coming and going and moving. Mm-hmm. So it's going to reload. Now, we're not talking about catching massive numbers on any one given area. This is the time of year where you could catch a lot of fish here. All of this, you could catch a lot of fish, but you're not going to catch a lot of fish maybe here. Or you're not going to catch a lot of fish here. Yeah. You know what I mean? You're going to catch a lot of fish in that area, but you're going to catch one or two in certain places. But as long as you keep moving, by the end of the day, you're going to put a lot of fish.
It's going to look good. Let me ask you this so that it also sounds like you're junk fishing. Obviously has a connotation of there is no pattern, so everything's in play. But I talked to Brian New about this on Monday, who did some junk fishing stuff on Lay Lake. He finished fourth in that event. But one of the interesting things that he talked about was he was going down long stretches of bank, but he also had very specific stuff that he was looking for in the grass, where like a cabbage met a water willow. Mm-hmm. And on a dock, he was looking for a very specific type of dock that didn't have the Black Death or the Gorilla Snot underneath it, that had current facing it and hitting it so that it would clear out the stuff. So he wanted that clean dock underneath, and then he wanted the mixture of the grass. So to me, it sounded like, he was junk fishing, but every rod, every technique that he had, there was also a pattern within that pattern. So there was a certain thing he was looking for in the grass, a certain thing he was looking for in a dock. You could have a certain thing you're looking for on laydowns, a certain thing you're looking for offshore. So you have a bunch of these little mini patterns within the chaos.
Right. And that was the opening statement. There's many different little patterns going on.
Yep.
And so you have to be cognizant of that. And that's 100% correct.
1, but that's how you kind of justify in your head the chaos of what you're doing instead of just randomly picking up something and trying it.
Right.
When you get to something, you're noticing where that fish sits on the lay down, whether it hit a square bill, whether it was flipping and it was at the base. So you could go back on all the day fours, how to fish lay downs, how to fish offshore, how to fish post-pod fish, how to fish shell, how to fish current.
Right, and you put them all together in one bag and throw it on the deck of your boat. Yeah. Because look, there's always specifics. Fish want specific things. We call it a junk pattern. The reason we call it a junk pattern is because you need 12 rods. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or 14 rods. Because you know, like you just said, when you pull up to a blowdown, they might be in the first big crotch of the tree where the branches first spread out, or they might be on the root ball against the bank. You'll pick this up as you go. So the next time you go to the blowdown, you know that I've got to flip something against the root ball and I got to square bill the first split in the branch. So now you're fishing the blowdown, but here you got two baits. You got a flipping bait and a square bill. Then you go down a little ways longer and there's a rock pile in 9 feet of water. So you pick up your deep little end or your Carolina rig or your wobblehead. And you do that. Same thing, you know, so there's mini patterns. There's mini patterns. So then you'll know when you're going down, as you start to catch fish throughout the day, you'll start to narrow down. Okay, I got to throw here on the blowdown. I got to throw here on the dock. And this is exactly what I'm looking for on a shell bed or a rock pile. And so then you could go down and now you're becoming way more efficient junk fishing. It's not random. You don't just pick up a rod it's not random. You still have to approach the cover or the structure. That's
fishing roulette.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's not random. You know, it's not, you're just going to flip a coin. Let me see. Spin heads, spinner bait. That's not it. You know, if you're coming around the corner and you got a windblown bank, your chances are better on with the spinner bait and a chatter bait than, you know, flipping something. Because you got the wind pushing on there, you got bait fish moving, eating the plankton where the wind's going, and so you use all your knowledge to do that, to gain, you know, to fine tune those multiple mini patterns. Really.
All right. One of the baits you mentioned was a little N.
Right.
Here's a little N here. Deep little N. I'm looking at all sorts of different colors when it's time to junk fish in this time of the year. What are the color palettes that you're primarily sticking with?
Okay. Lavender shad is one of my favorites right there. Holy shad is another one, which is to the right. Now, when I designed holy shad color, it's the picture doesn't do it justice at all because that bait is translucent. It's semi-transparent.
It's out of stock right now.
Well, yeah, it was a good seller. And then back down because I also have some oldies that are important. Chartreuse and blue is a very important mainstay of mine because I'll fish that in stained off color water, even dirty water, and then go back and then stop. Evu is another good color, extra virgin olive oil. That color there translates really good in clean water, real clear water, to stained water. That's really a good color. And then there should be another one called olive blue. Well, Bama shad's always good too.
But all these are mainly shad bluegill imitators. You're not fishing the oranges and the weird off color stuff. That was kind of more my point on or my question on this.
Yeah, because what's because we're out of the reds. Water temperature is way too warm. Bass are already done spawning. They're keying in on bait and bluegills. So I'm staying more bait fish.
Have you mentioned this? Have you gone through all 12 yet? Or did I?
I did real quickly.
Did you mention a shaky head?
I didn't even mention the shaky head. I did flick shake and Ned rig.
Okay, same thing. That'll fall under that. Okay.
Yeah, but no, the shaky head's a good bet too. Now on my shaky head, I do some weird things with my shaky head baits. I throw the finesse worm on it. I'll throw a dinger on it, a 5-inch dinger on it. But I'll also throw a 4-inch hook tail worm on it. And see, and these, there's a lot of, I'm so glad they put the color extension into the finesse worms, because now you've got, you know, GB Haze, Elder's Magic in it, Green Pumpkin Blue, which is one of my favorites. My favorite two colors, probably, if I had to pick two that I'm starting with wherever I go, is going to be Green Pumpkin Blue or GB Haze. Because GB Haze is translucent enough where in clear water, it's money. And in off-color water, it's money. And Green Pumpkin Blue is just, I mean, Green Pumpkin is good. If you're ever in doubt, just throw Green Pumpkin. Yep. You know what I mean?
A little bit of chartreuse, little splash of chartreuse on the 100%. Tail or not?
Yeah, I do. But a tiny bit. I mean, a real tiny bit. Yeah, because if you've ever seen bluegills and perch in the water, the rim on their tails has that vibrant greenish chartreuse hue to it. So I just want the representation basically. And that bait's really great on a flick shake too, especially in pressured areas, because it's way more finessey. And so that's kind of how I go with that. We also talked square bills, deep little ends, Carolina rigs, football jigs, wobble heads.
Stuff that covers all. Different
all the water columns. Yeah, all the water columns. Another bait that I didn't even mention, like a breaking shad or a super fluke style bait.
Yep.
That's also very good, because when you come up to those shallow areas, you can throw that thing up there and work it back. And here's something that I noticed a lot. When you think it's too shallow, it's not too shallow, because on some of these super clear water lakes, you can't see the bass in 10 inches of water. There's all kinds of debris, grass clumps, et cetera, and the bottom is mottled. So if you look at the bottom and it's not one smooth color and you see dark and light spots, that's money. Because that's where the bass hide. Couple days ago, that's how I was catching all my largemouth. I was throwing a wacky rig dinger in, 10 inches of water. I couldn't see any of the fish, but it worked everywhere. The bottom looked mottled, where I had light spots, dark spots. It worked. And when I got into places where the bottom was all the same color, I couldn't catch anything. And so I was scooting down the bank, and as soon as I came to an area where it looked all marbly and mottled, I would start casting out there and start catching them. Again, pattern within the pattern, right? They weren't all just in, 10 inches to 2 feet of water. There had to be the reason, and the reason was all that marbling meant that there were dips, high spots, grass clumps, debris, and a good bottom kind. Good bottom composition, because at the end of the day, we're at the tail end of the spawn right now. So at the end of the day, I'm catching fish that I can't see that are maybe on beds, and catching fish that are still in the area that are just leaving. So you want to be cognizant of that also.
So that's a lot of information. What we've basically done here is taken 3 months of day fours for the last 2 years and kind of said, hey, take the best of this once you know this technique and this technique and this technique and this technique, and you're kind of throwing it all together, and you might catch 9 bass on 7 different baits.
Absolutely. I mean, without a doubt, mm-hmm. that's junk fishing. You know, not fishing junk piles.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, let me ask you this about junk fishing. This is something I struggle with. I think something a lot of people struggle with. A lot of times you're going down the bank, you're doing it. There's 3 or 4 baits that might work. You're by yourself. Let's say you could throw a pad crasher up there. You could throw a spook. You could throw a chatterbait. You could throw a dinger. Maybe there's all sorts of things. So if you're in what you would consider high percentage, high quality, high bite quality water, and you're not getting bit on one thing and you're switching, are you going to fish that same water with 5 or 6 different offerings or how, you see what I'm saying? Like, how do you know you're not fishing past fish just because out of the 12 rods on your deck, you happen to pick up the wrong one and you're throwing a wobblehead when if you'd have been throwing a spook, you'd have gotten crushed. How do you know you're not fishing past fish when you're junk fishing? I guess is the easy.
Well,
way
because, answer. Because we're narrowing down the mini patterns, right? So let's say I'm going through an area and I'm not getting bit on a whatever bait I'm throwing. Mm-hmm. And then I pick up another rod because I come to I'm cruising. I'm keep moving. Mm-hmm. I see stuff that I should be fishing. I pick up a different rod and I catch one. Now I'm going to go, okay, they wanted that crazy shad.
So now you're going to go back and fish the crazy shad on the stuff you just fished and didn't get bit when you weren't throwing
it? If it looked really, really good to me and I should have got bit there, I may just turn around and go back.
Okay, that was my question.
Because if they're showing a preference, like here, I'll give you the other day, because this is 3 days ago. I said I'm fishing places that I never fished on this lake before. And I did it intentionally. I put myself in positions for constant learning. So I said, okay, I have traditional areas that I know I could go catch fish. I'm going here because I've never been here before. I've never seen it before. So I have to keep testing myself and I have to keep growing as an angler. So I go down this stretch and, the bottom was marbly and mottled, like I was explaining earlier. And I started ripping through there and I was throwing a shallow running jerkbait because I wanted to keep it off the muck, but keep moving. So I'm throwing it. I'm not catching anything. Nothing's following it. I had bluegills following it. So I'm like, bluegills. So I picked up my 5-inch dinger, GB Hayes, with a little spike on the tail. I don't coat it. I just do it like the bait's going to look. And I skip it out there and it's sinking down. And I'm kind of in a mode where I'm cruising and all I'm doing is I'm looking in front of me. I'm looking for stuff in the water. So I fired it out there. I wasn't paying attention to the bait. I was still looking where my next cast was going to go. And I felt a heaviness and I leaned in on it and I didn't even feel the bite. I leaned in on it and it was a decent largemouth. So I went, holy smokes, man. That was probably a spawner that I didn't see. So I went back to the beginning where I started seeing all this mottly stuff. And I went back in there. I picked up the GB Hayes and I went through there and I caught 3 other ones in an area that I just went through and didn't catch anything. So now I said to myself, okay, when I see the mottled marbled bottom and it's 2 foot or less, the wacky rig's going up there. So I started narrowing down what I'm looking at as to what I'm throwing. So as I'm progressing, I'm going, okay, wacky rig over here, jerkbait over there. You know what I mean? And so now as I'm going down the bank, now I'm picking up stuff and becoming really efficient for what I'm where I'm throwing. And so that's how you take a slop junk time of the year to your advantage, because yes, you're fishing 12 to 15 different rods, but now you're understanding which one's got to be thrown where. So if somebody's watching you and you're going down the bank, and 1 second you pick up this, and then another second you pick up that, you know, because of what you're fishing, what you need to be throwing, where a guy watching you will go, oh, he's just picking up rods willy-nilly. He doesn't know what he's doing. But really you do, because you're learning as you go. And so that's the key to junk fishing.
It's good stuff. You want to wrap things up with a couple of random viewer questions?
Yeah, let's do that. We haven't done that in a long time.
He says, I have a point that drops to 50 foot rather quickly. Any advice? I struggle with this too. You get on some fisheries where it's real shallow on top, and then it's just shoom, and you're in the abyss.
Right. So, okay. So we're going to have to assume you're talking about this time of year on that spot. So what you have to understand is, if the fish are pulling out to summer pattern, that particular point there can hold them in the summer. So we're going to that stage. So they'll actively feed on top of the point, but when they're not feeding on the point, since it's very vertical, they will suspend off of it. Because what happens is, it's super vertical, so they don't have to travel far to get to the top. In other words, they're not swimming a mile to get to the top of this thing. They're just rising or dropping. So when the feed mode hits them, they come up to the top. So on this particular point here, I'm fishing the top of that point when the wind is blowing, dude, because that's going to create current over the top of this point. It's going to put the feed bag on, and those fish are going to be feeding on top of that point. If it's slick flat, I'm going to back off the point and I'll throw a slow falling bait, try to catch those suspended fish on the edges of it. And normally they'll be on the inside swings on that, or on the very end tip of the point. Most of your fish will be on the swings. It's just a higher percentage area. And so that particular point there, if the wind's blowing, I'm going to go to it. If the wind's on it, I'm going there, because the only place they can actively feed is on top of it. Now, later in the year, which we'll cover in the next show, there'll be differences. But for now, that's how they're going to behave on that point.
Steven would like to know, can you junk fish, air quotes, offshore? Can you do the same thing but stay away from the bank and go around and try all sorts of offshore stuff with all sorts of different? Is it not work as good?
Well, you're going to be really offshore. You're going to be really offshore bait specific. You could call it junk fishing, because fishing offshore, you could have multiple rods out, because you're going to run into situations where a fish is going to take a preference over a crankbait versus a Carolina rig, or a wobblehead over all of them, or a football jig over all of them. I wouldn't call that so much junk fishing as I would my typical offshore arsenal.
Dialing it in.
Right. You're going to dial it in. I've had days where I went out with the anticipation of knocking their brains out on DD-22s. And I've caught the first three fish on a DD-22 and couldn't catch another one, and then picked up the Carolina rig and had one of the best days of my life. So the bass will tell you, you can't get fooled. You still have to switch it up until you really start honing in on it. But I wouldn't call that necessarily junk fishing, because I've got certain offshore.
Okay.
Tools that I use.
Here's a good one. Captain Lawson said, how should I look for spawners on a lake like St. Clair this weekend when there are very few contours, because it's basically a bowl?
Okay. So it's really easy. It's all about weeds and bottom composition. So what you're going to want to look for is sand, gravel, and rock, but they got to have vegetation mixed in there, because they're going to use the vegetation as cover. You can see, depending on how clear the lake is, because sometimes depending on which wind direction is and everything else, it'll turn up some of the bottom debris like sand and stuff like that. So you're going to want to put yourself in position where you can see better. So you're going to look for that cleaner water. And some of the smallmouth fisheries, when the sand is mixed in the water and it looks almost whitish, the bass don't like that so much because they breathe in the water, so all the particulate matter gets in their gills. It's not very comfortable for them. They won't necessarily vacate the area, but they could get harder to catch. So the cleaner the water, the better you have if you're sight fishing them, if you're looking for spawners.
And you're going high bypass and just going, and when you see it, you'll know it.
Yeah, you'll spot the beds. The beds are easy to spot. So like just the other day, I was sight fishing on some smallmouth on a big flat, 5 to 8 feet deep. So I was running the trolling motor, and I got where the sun was, where I can see farther in the water.
You want it behind you, right?
Yeah. So that's you want it so there's no glare on the water for you. So you could turn your boat around, and then you'll see, oh, I can really see good this way. That's the way you travel. If you can't parallel the flat, you can zigzag back and forth, knowing that on either your right turn or your left turn, you're going to have high visibility. And you keep moving. I spotted a bed. I didn't see the bass. It wasn't on the bed. I spotted the bed. It looked like a little pile of rocks with some shells on the outside of it. So I spot the bed. I don't see the bass. I turn the boat. I got a really good vision. About 10 feet away, I saw the smallmouth. So I spun the boat around where I can see the bed really clearly, and I waited it out. And she came back to the bed, and I pitched in on her, and she bolted again. So I'm like, dang it, that fish is not, she's not locking. She's there, but she's not, almost not catchable. So what I did was I repositioned my boat a different angle. I was really hard for me to see the bed, but she couldn't see me as good either. Okay. She came right back to the bed. She positioned herself on the bed. I threw the yum dinger out at her, and she got it. I didn't even feel it. I didn't see her flare on it because I could barely see her. The sun angle was horrible. She flared on it. I just leaned on her a little bit. I had a couple head shakes and it came off. I said, oh, I'm going to catch her on the next one. So the wind was pushing me on her bed. She scattered again. So now I went behind the bed so I could be into the wind. And I waited on her. She came back and I caught her on the next cast. It was a 4-pounder. I caught her on the next cast. So it was a game of cat and mouse, so to speak. Like I said, I left those fish. I didn't stay in sight fish on the bedders. I left them. And then I actually went crappie fishing with active target.
You're screwed on that. That's all you're going to do now. Brett would like to know. We'll take another question here. For northern glacial lakes, after the bass are done spawning, do you prefer staying shallow and fishing near bluegill beds or bouncing and going offshore?
Okay, so the bass are going to tell me what I have to do. I like the northern lakes a lot because you're going to have a mix of...
Is that like Cayuga?
Yeah, you're going to have... It's, you know, Cayuga, Oneida, Seneca. Champlain, Seneca, all those lakes. You're going to have a multitude of grass, rock, gravel, sand. And with glacier lakes, there's going to be a definitive break somewhere. So they're not, I don't want to say they're easy, but they're easier because all you have to do is get where they were spawning and start to fish your way out to the first break. Or you can do it in reverse. Get on the first break and fish your way to where they were spawning. Somewhere in the interim, you're gonna find the depth range that the fish want to be at. I say depth range because that's very important in the northern lakes. The fish will utilize a certain depth based also on clarity, okay, water clarity, because you know some of these northern lakes, super clean, and some of them not so much. Mm-hmm. So the depth range is the important factor here. Like there's one lake that right now you can be fishing 2 foot, 3 foot to 0 feet and catching them, and the spawn is over for the most part. And there's another lake literally 30 minutes away from this lake that's super clear, and you got to be in the 8 to 9 to 10 foot range. They're doing the same thing, but they're doing it a little deeper on the cleaner lake. But the northern glacier lakes are pretty easy, because you just need to establish depth first, and then you'll dial right in on them. And don't ignore topwaters on the clear northern lakes, Super Spook Juniors, Crazy Shads, etc. Don't ignore that on these lakes, because they can find fish for you.
All right, two more quick questions. Tidal water.
Fishing tidewater.
When do you know to go deep, or when do you just stay shallow and fish the...
Okay, the tidal waters are tricky in a sense that they bite way better on the outgoing and the incoming. And the outgoing is the best. Mm-hmm. The incoming, as long as the water's moving in or out, you're going to have biteable fish. What I've noticed about tidal water, with the exception of winter, for the most part, the bass are always going to be from that 2 to 7 or 8 foot range. I very seldomly catch them deeper than that, except in the winter time in tidal waters, because they're going to look for areas outside current in the winter where they're going to want the deep holes in creek mouths or in man-made marinas. They'll winter in those places. They can reuse those places in the summer also, but I've had too many good days on tidal fisheries in the summer fishing waist deep or shallower. It's all predicated on tide movement.
Okay, that's good stuff. And then last one, Matthew Hyde says, how much will this backdoor cold front coming from the northeast that's approaching the Midwest affect the bite this weekend? What about cold fronts this time of the year, as kind of as a general question? Because we've dealt with that a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how severe it's mm-hmm. going to really be. It depends how severe it is. As we get closer to summer, cold fronts aren't as dramatic. And to be honest with you, I would just approach the fishing day the normal way you would. And if things aren't working, then you're going to have to start switching it up. And it may be in the case of 100% total reaction bites, fast moving baits, making them bite it, or you may have to slow down and get meticulous on them. If you could see them down there and they're not biting, better yet, because then you could experiment on those fish. Once you get the bite or the reaction, then you'll know how to translate it the rest of the way. There's no science. There's no exact science when it comes to cold front fish, because I've had frontal conditions where I thought you had to slow way down and I would be burning crankbaits like a madman and knocking the snot out of them during a cold front, and finding out that it's all reactionary strikes. And conversely, I've gone out during the cold front, or just right after, which is really the toughest time, mm-hmm. Just right after, where I had to literally, milk a flick shake, and then all of a sudden you go, dunk, and oh, there he is. You know what I mean? So you got to experiment with it, because every place is different. Up here, if the bass stopped eating every time we had a cold front, they'd starve to death. So, it's different places. The worst place I've ever seen cold fronts affect fish is in Florida.
Yeah, the Florida strain cold front. Yeah. Well, there's the music that I started, because I said that would be our last question. next week's show, what's the topic again?
Suspending bass.
All right. A couple other came to mind that we might want to put in the kitty for future. There was a listener who suggested a show on fishing roadbeds, finding roadbeds, fishing roadbeds. There's a lot there. Like, that one's a really good topic, is it not?
Yeah, I love that topic.
Actually. And then piggybacking on what you just said, post-frontal bluebird conditions.
Okay.
Is there enough there for a show there, or is it just, hey, welcome to day 4, number 120, don't go?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's tricky, but we could tap into that. It's tricky, but we could do it.
All right. Like I said, congratulations on the graduation of your daughter. It's out there, and it's out there in your favorite state in the country, isn't it, Uncle Frank?
Yeah,
that's where you're considering moving to, isn't it?
Yeah, you got a good chance of that, Matt. I'll take up golf before I move there.
Cost of living, politics, weather, three for three.
I'm taking up golf before I live there.
All right. This has been another edition of Day 4 with the man Frank Scalish. We'll talk to everybody next week. See ya.